to you from the heart of Ventura County in Oxnard, California. This is Real VC, a podcast all about Ventura County real estate. My name is Reed Fish. I'm the CEO of Upmarket Media, and I'm delighted to have my co-host, Katie Connolly, here, who is the assistant team leader at Keller Williams, West Ventura County. Katie, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Well, we shouldn't do time. People might be listening to this at night. Oh, whatever. Hello, good morning. Also, producing the show, Chelsea Froelich. Hello, Chelsea. You're
Hello,
here.
Hello, good morning.
Hi. I'm surrounded by amazing people, and Katie, there's been a kind of bombshell in the real estate world, in the industry. And so we want to spend today talking about this bombshell. But I think the two of us maybe are not equipped enough to really get into it. I think we needed to have a special someone come in.
We brought in the expert, the true spokesperson, official spokesperson for all realtors in Ventura County, Ms. Cami Pinsak, the 2024 Ventura County Coastal Association of Realtors president, and of course, broker owner of Realty One Group Summit. Inc. Did I get it all? Yes. Did I add words?
I think you got it all. Good morning, everybody.
Well, so Cami, can you just really quickly lay out, and the bombshell I'm talking about is the proposed settlement between NAR. Do you guys call it NAR or NAR?
NAR.
Okay. Between NAR and the home sellers, right? Or whoever the settlement is. Just, can you tell us? I don't know anything about it. So tell us what's going on. And then we'll talk about what it is. And then we're going to lay out a bunch of ways that realtors can strategize about how to deal with this.
Okay. So the huge news is the NAR settlement. And how is that going to change the way that we do real estate in California, in the country, moving forward? So there was a landmark judgment in the Sitzer-Burnett case. It took about 2 hours to deliberate, uh-huh. and they came back with a guilty verdict. And it was for damages in about $1.78 billion. Right?
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but then it's antitrust, so it was trebled to about $5.4 billion.
That's not only was it trebled, it was trouble.
Tripled. It was trebly trebled.
Yes.
So, I mean, that just, you know, everybody was, right?
Yeah, of course.
And then we had some settlements right away. REMAX did settle for about $55 million. Anywhere settled for, more than that, a little bit more than that. And then Keller Williams did settle. And then we had recently Compass settled and Real Brokerage. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, who is also named as a defendant in this case, has not settled yet.
Okay.
Okay. And the issue is that essentially home sellers in a certain area claimed that they lost out on money because they had to pay too much in commissions to the buyer's agent. Right? Uh-huh. Why should I pay that agent? They're not working for me, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
And so the jury had to follow a per se ruling, which really didn't allow them any leeway, which is why they came to the verdict so quickly. Okay. And what does that mean? So when the settlement came out, and NAR did hold out, which led a lot of speculation, NAR has always said, we are not guilty. This is a great system. It has worked well uh-huh. for decades and allowed the most amount of choice and opportunity for home sellers and buyers. And
right.
commissions have always been negotiable. That is the primary thing that we want to get across as uh-huh. A realtor. So they settled for $418 million, NAR did, right? Included in that was no admittance of guilt. Over 1 million members are covered in this settlement, right? So even if the brokers were not covered, the members were.
So in essence, even Berkshire Hathaway, who is not settled, their agents are covered by this settlement, even if the brokers are not. Okay. Mm-hmm. See, this is good. This is why you're here yeah. and I'm not.
So the state and local associations are covered, mm-hmm. and any state and local association owned MLSs are covered. And then any brokerage which had transaction volume in 2022 of less than $2 billion, they were also covered. Those who had transaction volume of over $2 billion, there was a mechanism for which they could settle, which we quickly saw Compass and Real Brokerage settle according to that formula.
Okay.
So just for clarity for our listeners, when you say members, you mean NAR members, correct?
NAR members.
And then so what actually exactly is NAR? Is it a government entity? Is it a trade organization? I still think there's a lot of people that aren't totally sure on what this organization
and
is.
Add on to that question for me, the dumb guy is like, does every realtor have to be associated with NAR?
Oh, great, great questions. If you are a realtor, and let's actually back it up. You get your license, you go and join a brokerage. If that broker of record is a realtor, then the agent also must become a realtor, because all realtors act underneath the umbrella and as a representative of the broker. Okay. So if the broker is a realtor, then the agent must also be. And we have what's called a three-way agreement, meaning if you are a member of your local association, you are also a member of your state association and the national association. And NAR is probably the largest trade organization in the world and one of the biggest lobbyers in the country and the state. There were also some rules in place with this settlement. And one of those rules was essentially the decoupling of commissions. Previously, part of the MLS model rules were that the listing agent, the listing broker, had to offer a unilateral offer of compensation through the multiple listing service. In more recent years, that offer of compensation has become more transparent, so the public could see what the buyer's broker was going to be earning on that transaction. Okay. That is now going to completely go away through the MLS.
Okay. So there's less transparency.
That's one way to look at it. That argument has been made, Reed.
Okay. Less public transparency. Yes.
What it does, it doesn't mean that sellers can't offer compensation. It just can't be done through the mechanism of the MLS anymore.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know. The whole MLS, it just, whatever. Yeah. I find it to be I don't know. I can't figure it out.
It's a lot of layers. Yeah. I mean, I know you've been talking about buyer representation for many, many years, probably before any of this, hit the fan a couple weeks ago. So you're definitely well versed than most. And it's a lot. So that's how you can ramble on deeply about all of this information.
Right. Okay. Complaining about the MLS, that's for another episode, or maybe a whole series of episodes. But that compensation is not on the MLS. So how are people going to know, and how materially, what does it look like as you are going to try to approach, if you are a buyer's agent and you want to get paid how is this going to work logistically?
Okay, so we bring it back to something Katie said, the buyer representation agreement. In California, we call it the buyer representation broker compensation agreement. So a BRBC, don't laugh at all the acronyms. You got to nail these to be in the business.
Yeah,
you know?
I know, that's why I'm
there's
not
a
in
test.
The business. Yeah, exactly.
The BRBC. Uh-huh. And the rules say that regardless of what it's called in your state, that the realtor must get a buyer representation agreement signed by a buyer client before even touring homes. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's a lot. And mm-hmm. that is something new for buyers, that they couldn't just call up the agent on, mm-hmm. An online marketing site and mm-hmm. say, I want to go see that house. Now there has to be a conversation about how that agent gets paid. Mm-hmm. Right. So that is one of the other changes as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and I guess we can get into maybe more of that later, but that doesn't seem like a bad thing if I'm a buyer's agent. For me looking at it right away is like, how many times have you had to, show 20 houses and then the person buys it with someone else a month later?
Yeah.
Right. So it kind of protects you.
Like Katie said, I'm a huge believer in these agreements because I think buyers, agents have so much value that really, and this is one of the reasons we got into this trouble, because we made it look so easy for our clients. We literally shielded them from all of the bad stuff that happened behind the scenes. And so what they saw was, I told them which house I liked on an online marketing site. And then I signed some documents and they handed me the keys, which is great for the consumer experience. But if they don't know how difficult it is, it's hard to attach a value to that.
There you go.
We made it look too easy.
Exactly. We made it look too easy.
Right. As the layperson here, I mean, that's what I have heard from so many people. And even I've thought before I ever did like real estate media, real estate photography, you're like, oh, realtors, well, they make a phone call and they make $20,000.
They unlock doors, professional door unlockers.
And so I think the public perception is you guys don't really do anything. And what is the value that you're bringing, especially on the buyer side? It's like, okay, I just need a chaperone to go look at these houses. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's basically it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and of course I know that there's a lot more to it than that, but that is public perception from a lot of people.
Yeah. So I really think there is definitely that shift is good. Letting people know what you actually do to earn your money is positive. And I think it's something like 74% of the public still really, really believes that a realtor is important in purchasing a home. Maybe I think it's 76, and 24% think they can do it on their own. God bless them. You go for it.
I mean, yeah, 24% of people just in general are morons. Well, so, you know, so it tracks.
Hey, you know, everybody has their own skill set
I can throw out those hot takes. You can.
I'm gonna keep the party line here.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what it's gonna look like on the buyer side. Then what? Is there any other big rule change that is happening, or you know that we have to be aware of?
Well, as Katie said, this is a proposed settlement. So while all the financial obligations, those were the two major big rule changes, right?
Okay, well, let's. I want to backtrack on that. It's proposed, but I keep hearing it goes into effect on July 1st.
Right?
I've heard so many crazy things. Yeah.
Well, so, does it go into effect on July 1st?
As soon as it gets approved.
But if it's not approved yet, and who has to approve it? Like the judge or
the
something?
Judge.
Yeah. So if it's not approved by July 1st, then it's just going to kick the can down. It'll be August 1st.
Yeah. But what the whole industry is doing is kind of preparing for those changes now and enacting them, which is good. You know, we had already enacted some rule changes because of the DOJ settlement that happened even before. So the industry had kind of moved in this direction anyway. We just kind of saw the writing on the walls, and people who were savvy were really making moves in that direction.
Basically, I think that covers kind of what it is. Now, what is the landscape for the average realtor going to look like after this?
Honestly, I don't think it's going to change. I think I think that it's a small, minute percentage of the industry that when this came down, they like gleefully went, how am I going to make this work in my favor? I'm going to, you know, double end every single deal because it's not going to cost me anything more. I'm going to make all the money. Right. I don't think that is indicative of the general realtor mindset. I think everybody thought, well, how am I still going to be able to help my clients achieve the American dream? Right.
Okay.
I think that is. And I think that there were some concerns about financing because there are certain government entities that financing entities that don't allow buyers to pay compensation. Think VA.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How is that going to work? Right. We're still trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I know that the Mortgage Bankers Association and NAR did send letters to HUD to try and VA to try and get some clarification on how this was going to work. And I really do think it's going to change, because can you imagine the narrative that we live in a country where people lay down life and limb and cannot yeah. achieve the American dream of home ownership.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't see that happening.
Yep. Right. Right. Well, I've heard some chatter that the buyer side compensation formula, you know, it might see some change. And so if it is in fact that the actual buyers are going to have to pay their agents, then you could be looking at scenarios where the agent's going to be paid hourly, where they're going to, or get a, you know, or whatever, get the traditional percentage of the sale, but it's going to be, of course, less than, you know, because in my mind, it's 2.5%. I mean, I know it's negotiable, but that seems to be a number that I hear about a lot.
And I'm just going to go ahead and preface, because I have to, that we are technically competitors sitting in a room, and we're not supposed to have that number conversation.
Sure. Okay. I can say it. I'm not a competitor.
I know.
And I think, and I'm really glad you bring that up, because I always don't get those.
How we all got in trouble in the first place. Yes, that's how NAR kind of got brought into this, because they said, we go to all these conferences and we talk about this together, and sure. it was price
yeah,
fixing.
It's collusion and everything else. Yeah. But can we talk more generally though about the how, and not specific numbers,
yeah.
but how we're going to see buyer's agents get paid?
So I look at this as such an opportunity. It's actually really exciting, because I think that everybody had this idea stuck in their head of what they were going to make and how they were going to make it. And this is just, this is the way we're going to get compensated.
Right.
Right. And now it opens it up for so much freedom and mm-hmm. thinking outside of the box.
Right.
And you mentioned hourly. Oh my God. I love that. And mm-hmm. actually probably some agents would make way more money sure. hourly than they would just on a percentage basis.
Well, and I think there's leverage there too, in terms of making, if you're a buyer's agent, to making your time more efficient as well, because then what that is going to, if someone is paying you hourly, they're going to be a little more choosy about when they have you out there. So they're not going to be, you know, cause now I assume people, I just want to see every house, or I want to see, you know, and there's so much, it's just looky-loos, right? And it's just wasting your time. So at least if someone's going to be wasting your time, you're going to get paid for it.
True. Yeah. You know? I've seen some very, very interesting TikToks about that.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Okay. So there is going to be creativity, and then, but then what does this mean for listing agents?
Okay. So some people are thinking, well, everybody's just going to double end everything. Well, don't forget that the listing agent, once they chat with an unrepresented buyer, because the code of ethics doesn't go away, and that's an obligation that they have to determine whether that individual is represented exclusively by another realtor, they have to then sign a buyer representation agreement with them, mm-hmm. right? And that buyer representation agreement can't have zero in it.
Right.
It has to have have zero in it, but it has to have some number where there is an expectation of compensation in there, mm-hmm. right? So if they have zero in that, that means that they must have made an agreement either with the seller, mm-hmm. or they literally will be working for free.
Right.
So I think they're going to be reduced compensation, but then buyer's agents can lean into that. Mm-hmm. And maybe match that price.
Right. Well, and I got to think, double ending things have always felt a little odd to me. And in fact, I lost my mom recently, and she had a little mobile in Palm Springs that we sold, and the agent. And it felt a little shady because the agent double ended it and didn't like lead with that. And it was like, we had to figure it out like later. And it was just like, oh, wait a sec. It felt to me like, and I feel like as a home seller, a lot of them are going to be like, well, wait, I don't want you double ending, because or at least you have to make that case that, oh no, you know what? I can represent both sides of the deal. It just feels like there's a conflict of interest there. I've always felt that. And that's again, just from that layman perspective.
Well, there is the possibility that the buyers could actually be unrepresented.
Sure.
Right. So how would that work? The listing agent would then have to have the buyer sign a buyer non-agency that essentially says, look, I will fill out this form for you and I will transact documentation. But every decision I make is going to be with the seller in mind, and I owe you no fiduciary duty. Please sign here. mm-hmm. And I think we will see more of that as well, which is really who loses? The buyers.
Mm-hmm.
the buyers because they're going into the largest purchase of their life with no guidance except for what they can Google.
Mm-hmm. And they're up against hopefully professional negotiators that do this more often than they do.
Yes. So,
yep.
Well, that seems bad.
Yeah. So hire a buyer's agent.
Well, then what is the messaging for realtors in terms of like, I mean, how can you all make sure that buyers see your value?
Tell stories. Don't just list what you do during a transaction, but make it come to life in your marketing. Mm-hmm. Tell stories of where you saved buyers tens of thousands of dollars, or you were able to avoid a potentially disastrous situation because of your guidance, your market knowledge, and your experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings me, I do want to bring that around to marketing. And I think, you know what, Katie, I think we kind of talked about this before. There's so much here. I think we're going to maybe dispense with our kind of normal formula for the show, and we'll maybe skip.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, skip. Because I think there's so much good stuff. So we always have a marketing segment. So I guess we can just kind of work it into this more general conversation, and we will, of course, we're going to end the show with action items. Don't everyone worry. I know there's an expectation for that. Don't worry. We got it. We got you covered there. But in terms of marketing, I was having a conversation with another team leader at a different brokerage, and they were saying that because I'm worried about my business, right? So we do, you know, media for listings primarily. And they were saying, you know, there could be an open market for you now in doing more work for buyer's agents. Because now typically we do not work with buyer's agents. We're just working with listing agents. And it could be a scenario where buyer's agents are going to have to market a little more aggressively and use some of our services, which are not, you know, we don't just take photos of houses, you know, maybe more creative reels and videos and things of that nature. I mean, are you telling your agents, and Katie, you know, I guess this is a question for you too, is like, are you telling your agents that they're going to have to market in a different way now, especially on the buyer side?
1,000%. I mean, I hope that buyer's agents can really lean into these experienced listing agents and who have also told stories for years and validated and defined their compensation for years and their value. And these buyer's agents, you know, some of them just, okay, can I see this house at 315 and it's 305? Sure. And they run over there. What kind of value does that show? So buyer's agents leveling up and knowing neighborhoods better, maybe that will be on reels. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm a neighborhood specialist.
Mm-hmm. Saying,
mm-hmm. Hey, I can't meet you at 315. I need to wait until at least 4:30 because they do want to do their research and find out what neighborhood it's in, find out a little bit more about the house, not just be that door unlocker, like I said. Mm-hmm. So leveling up and having all of the things that you do for marketing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as well as negotiating and representation, all that wonderful stuff.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to what I think you said, Cammie, was tell stories, right? And that's the core of marketing, right?
You know what realtors need to stop doing?
Oh, I don't.
Sold in 3 days.
Yeah.
Sold another one. I'm the top producer. I'm the fastest. Mm-hmm. I'm the best. What needs to happen is every transaction, it needs to tell the story, because we all know that there is no transaction that is exactly like the other one. Mm-hmm. Any realtor thinks that they are going to have it down perfectly and they are going to avoid any pitfalls along the way. Well, that's just a myth, and they have to tell the story of the transaction and how they help their client navigate those potential pitfalls. Mm.
All right. Well, and then what about then the marketing side for listings? And I've been thinking about a conversation I actually had with you, Cammie, a few weeks ago when this kind of first came out. And you were saying that you can see a scenario where potentially, you know, where now it's just I list your house and this is what I do. But now you're saying that there could be moments where listing agents are going to come with different packages, right?
Sure.
Where you're going to, if you want this level of service, it's going to cost you this much. If you want this level of service, it's going to cost you this much.
I think we're going to see so much innovation. Mm-hmm. I think it's just really exciting to see how people are going to respond to this. And true real estate professionals have always risen to the level of innovation and found new and better ways to serve their clients.
Sure. Well, and and I think it's part of that because, and of course, I'm very self-centered, and I was thinking about that in terms of how it relates to a market media and how we are servicing our clients on the listing side. And I think you were saying that there, you could see there being, well, if you just want basic photos, it's on this basic package we have. If you want this, you want that. Are you going to be mad at me if I really push back on that with you right now? Because, you know,
let's go for bring it.
And so I think the idea behind that is that the homeowner is choosing the package that they want from the realtor. And part of that is the marketing, right? But what I don't like about that is it puts the power of your marketing in your home seller's hands. And what if that homeowner is like, oh, my cousin Sal, he takes great photos. We'll just have him do everything. Then all of a sudden, Sal is taking your media, your listing photos, and they're horrible. Mm-hmm. And that, and your name is out there on that. Because, and it really goes back to something that I think we've been thinking about at Upmarket Media for the last, really since the pandemic, is we always thought of ourselves as real estate marketing, right? And that's kind of in our name. We're real estate media professionals. But what we actually do is we market realtors. We do not market real estate. Because cousin Sal can take crappy photos of the house and it's still going to sell if it's priced right. But are you going to get another listing from that? Probably not. So when you are, when we produce marketing materials for the home, what we're actually doing from the front shot to the drone, to the 3D, to whatever it is we're doing for that property is we're marketing the agent. And I would really caution agents to not put the decision on your marketing. Let the homeowner make that because their interests are not always aligned in yours. Your main interest, of course, is providing the best service you can for your homeowner and getting them the best, meeting their goals, whether it's sold quickly or a high price, whatever those goals are, right? You want to make sure you do that. But at the same time, you're also marketing yourself. And so we always say, even like, if we shoot a listing for you, I don't even care if it sells, right? I don't. What I care about is if, do you get another listing? That's our metric of success. I wanted to put that out there because I think it's really important, even now, especially, for realtors to be in control of their marketing and do what they think is best for their selves.
I agree 100%. You're not going to find a lot of pushback for me. I think the conversation we were having, and it was at a party with cocktails.
No, of course.
I think I was at that party.
but look, again, a savvy listing agent is going to be in control of the experience that they want to have. They want this listing to have. And as I tell my agents all the time, how you do one thing in your business is how you are perceived to be doing everything.
Right.
So I am a huge proponent of professional photos. How they wrap that into a package for their client to choose from is really, that's where they have the autonomy to do that. But being innovative in no way equates to subpar.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think that's just what you have to watch out for, you know, and because, and we see it, you know, we work with a full, the full spectrum of agents and we have certain agents where you're, oh man, if they put an order in, you know, you're going to walk into that house and it's perfectly staged. The homeowner's not going to be there. Everything's going to be ready for us. And then others, you're like, okay, what's the shit show we're going to see today?
Yeah.
You know? And so, but, and that really comes from the agent. And so I know that our top clients are going to walk in and say, well, no, this is just what we do. And, you know, and they're going to be able to tell that story of what the value is for these things.
Yeah.
You know,
100%. So I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I just don't think that we are really, some agents are going to lean into that model where, where they say that it's, you know, value over the quantity, over quality, if you will, they are going to lean into that. And there's always room in the market for that.
Yeah. And we don't think that everyone's marketing should be the same, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we have a vested interest in selling more marketing materials, but it's like that's, it's not always useful because there are certain agents who don't know how to use video and they can't. So I don't, you know, I know. And it's just like with you, it's like, you don't want to, the other angle I thought of in that is if you have to sell them on a deluxe marketing package to your homeowner, realizing that it really markets the realtor. Well, you're trying to get them to pay for something that doesn't really benefit them. And I'm on the same thing. I don't, if you're never going to use a video, I don't want to sell you a video. I mean, I want to sell a video, but I don't want to sell you something that you don't need. That's not what we're about. That's not what any of us are about. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, the one other thing on the marketing, and someone brought it up and I'm curious your take on it. In this other conversation I had with another broker, was they thought that we were going to see maybe a little bit of a resurgence again in the 3D tour. like we had during COVID when it was like, we were doing a 3D, a Matterport 3D on every single listing. I mean, it was crazy. And now those have leveled back off, but they thought there was going to be an angle where, because buyer's agents are going to be, you know, if they're moved to more of that hourly model and you have potential buyers wanting to be more careful about the homes they see, that having more materials online for buyers to walk through ahead of time can then let them see that house and say, oh, you know, I do want to see that in person. And so they thought that there could be an angle to be doing even more like 3D stuff. I don't know.
I think that's a really astute perspective, actually. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. And also I happen to sell 3D tours. So it really makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
So
what has the temperature been that you've received so far? Cause not only do you have your own agents that you coach, mentor, teach, and educate, but as the president of the association, you're kind of like our ombudsman. I mean, I know I've called you. I know I've told other people to call you to get clarity. So just like I said, what's the temperature been from agents and consumers? If you've talked to any consumers about these proposed changes.
Yeah. So I think in my office, they're good. They're completely good. We've been talking about articulating your value and buyer representation agreements for quite a long time now. I think as far as generally, I think most agents are really okay. We're just going to keep moving on and doing what we always did. I mean, for the love of God, we sold houses and some people had their best years in a global pandemic. Oh, we got this, right? I think that where I'm getting the most questions is people see Ventura County Coastal Association of Realtors. That's local. It's tangible. They can touch it. They can go there. I think that even many agents see the value at the state level because of all the advocacy issues that are so
zip forms,
so specific to our state, and that's where all the forms come from. So they see the value there. I think where the disconnect is coming a little bit is with NAR, with the national, like what do they do for us? And then we've had all of these stories and they didn't fight for us, you know, and do we have to belong to NAR, right? And a lot of realtors don't understand the three-way agreement at all. And so I think that when we are going to Washington, D.C. Shortly in the beginning of May, and I think those meetings are going to be fascinating. They're the NAR business meetings because obviously there is a whole new topic of conversation going on. It's not really new, but it's really can't be ignored anymore. I think that NAR really is going to need to be poised to give us some really great talking points. Again, much like we shield our buyers from what we do every day, I think that there needs to be more articulation about the advocacy efforts that NAR puts out there, you know, in financing, what they're fighting for, that we're trying to raise the capital gains from 250 and 500 to 500 to a million. So people won't get taxed that are not living in a home that serves them anymore, but they can't afford to move out. There are large issues that NAR is fighting for us all of the time, as well as designations, the buyer designation, seller designation, green designation, real estate negotiation. There are all of these educational pieces as well. So I think that really needs to be articulated by NAR to get people at the local level a little bit more engaged in that three-way agreement.
And I mean, I think you said it best earlier, it comes in storytelling, because I'm sure that there's many people that are listening today that don't know part of your role as president isn't just to run our little Ventura County Coastal down here, but it is to travel and to be engaged at the national level in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely.
Because who really, did you know that she does that?
No.
For part of her that. Job? No, her volunteer job.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, volunteer job.
Yeah. Right. So. The more we can communicate about anything, right, the better. And I mean, that's the purpose of this podcast. I mean, this is why we're here, to communicate all this stuff. And the more dialogue there is, I think that's the way we're going to navigate this. Right. And it's really, it's almost like there's so many realtors that you just need to like educate them. Right. It's like, it's not even about the general public. Right. And I mean, that's one of the services we're trying to do with this podcast is being able to educate our realtor community, because, yeah. You know, not, and I know at your brokerage and at Katie's that you have done a great job at educating everyone, but that's not maybe the case at every single brokerage.
Well, and where the local association comes in too is, I think we have 300 independent brokerages in Ventura County Coastal Association of Realtors. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Now they might be one or two people, that type of, a thing, but that
I would have said 20.
Well, that is where we really are able to give that educational piece if they don't have a corporate educational piece. Right. Uh-huh. I know Katie does. I do. And that is a bonus. But for a lot of these independents, they don't have that.
Sure.
So this is where the local association, that education, and California Association of Realtors and NAR really can serve them well.
And finding the right information, because it's so easy to find the wrong information on the TikToks that you mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet. I bet. Well, we didn't do a social media sidebar, but let's take one second to just say where we can find you. Cammie, where, if we're going to find you online, because I'm sure you go crazy on social media. You're talking about TikTok. So where do we find you?
It's really difficult. It's just Cammie Pinsak at everything.
Okay. P-I-N-S-A-K.
Yep.
And Cammie, C-A-M-I. And Katie?
Same. I'm sure you could Google me and all my stuff pops up. I'm most active on Instagram, which is Katie0024. It's a mix of all things real estate, work, family, fun.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. And then we are upmarket.media on social media. And that's where you'll find social media about this podcast as well. We might have a little behind the scenes about this episode. And to follow us on these platforms, it does require you taking a little bit of action. So that means it's time for our action items. So, Katie's rubbing her hands together. I think Katie should go first.
I get to go first. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So this is something that's very important to me, for everyone to do. I can always make mine better, but really defining your unique value proposition. So your UVP, I'm sure Upmarket Media has a unique value proposition. You have few unique things that you do, but as individuals to really have like, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, hey, mm-hmm. Reed, whoever it may be, this is what I'm going to do for you. And they'll say, wow.
Right. And that should just be like a one sentence deal. Two sentences.
I mean, mine's a one sheet.
Oh, it's a one sheet. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah.
With some bullet points and pictures. It's very visual.
Well, that's a very big action item. So yeah, I want the one line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to know, you want to have a framework to think about that and actually come up with something, I think is.
Yep. And it's always a work in progress.
Yeah. So. Of course. Of course.
Cammie, what do you have for us?
I'm actually going to pirate mine from Tom Ferry. And I think it just really resonated with me as agents need to, it's all about processes, contracts, and conversations. That's how we're going to navigate this. Get your processes set. Create your buyer consultations. Articulate your value, right? And then know your contracts. There are going to be new contracts coming out to deal with all of this. And then just have the conversations. Don't be afraid of the conversations. Be curious in differing opinions. Don't be defensive. And just be, you know, practice, not scripts, but practice the conversation. Uh-huh. And so that's my action item.
All right. That's great.
That's good.
My action item, I stole from somebody.
Me too. So
yeah. I stole it from you, Cammie.
Oh, awesome.
So you, it's something you said right before we started recording, and it's very simple. It's ignore the haters, because I think there is a lot of hate swirling around this settlement. And it's coming from,
yes, we're cartel,
from some realtors, and it's also coming from the public. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, you're getting what you deserve. Well, I think you just have to ignore that and just press on and do all the stuff that you both just said. It's really, what's your unique value proposition? It is, you know, understanding, you know, just understanding how to communicate about this. And if you do that, then you can ignore those haters. But then if they do pop up on you, you at least have something to defend yourself with and value to bring to them.
It's like I always told my girls growing up, know what you know, let it go.
Love it.
Put that one on the marker board too.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what I know. It's time to end the show. Thank you everyone for being here. Cammie, that was fantastic. I think that's going to be helpful to a lot of people. And Katie, you're smart too. There's a reason you're co-host of the show.
Why does he sound so surprised? Yeah. Well, it was a pleasure being here. Thank you so much, both of you, for having me.
And Chelsea, thanks. You got in a lot on this episode.
Oh yeah. I'm here though.
Yeah, of course. All right. Thank you everybody. And thank you for listening. And we're going to be back. We're doing these every 2 weeks. We're trying to drop them on Tuesdays. So definitely come back in 2 weeks on a Tuesday and we'll have another episode for you. Thanks everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Real VC is a production of Upmarket Studios. This episode was produced by Chelsea Froelich and edited by Bethany Diedrich. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. But in the meantime, we hope that all your transactions will be smooth. Thank you for everything.